Mr. Chair, we have the recording started and we can go at your call here.
Okay, great. Thank you. Sorry for being a little bit late here, but good morning. Welcome everyone to the Revenue Bond Oversight Committee meeting of August 13th, 2024. Can we have a roll call, please?
Member Camp.
Present.
Camp, present. Member Leung.
Present.
Leung, present. Vice Chair Vuthy.
Present.
Vuthy, present. Member Wieser.
Present.
Wieser, present. Chair Holober.
Present.
Holober, present. Mr. Chair, all members are present.
Wonderful. We will now move on to item number two on the agenda, which is general public comment. This is the opportunity to speak on items that are not on today's agenda, and the clerk will open it up on the Teams meeting.
Thank you. If you have public comment and you're connected remotely through Teams, please raise your hand and we will hear from you. Delaying for a moment to see if we have any speakers. And Mr. Chair, it appears we have no speakers.
Okay. We are going to close public comment and move on to item number three, which is the audit update. And we will go to the City Services Auditor to provide that presentation.
Good morning, members of the committee. This is Hunter Wong with CSA. I'm here with Masanda DeJanza from CSA, and then Tasha Dunn from HKA and Eugene Yano from Yano Accountancy. So during this reporting period, as you may all know, the city has been dealing with a pretty difficult budget season and our typical fiscal year end closing activities. And so because of this, progress on the project has been a little slower than expected in the recent months. We're currently working to obtain all the sample documentation from the department for our fieldwork testing. We've gotten a lot of it. They're providing it to us on a rolling basis as their staff who are providing the documents are working on year-end closing activities. But they're continuing to roll in documents to us. So we're working to get the whole universe of documentation that we'll need to really go through our fieldwork. At this point, our current anticipated date for providing a draft report is end of November. But I do want to, just as a reminder for those on the committee, as our audit field work commences and we identify any potential issues, our standards do require us to thoroughly inspect those issues and do our due diligence. And so we are in a situation where we don't know right now. As we find more in field work, there may be things that we'll need to spend a little bit more time on doing, and that may continue to push out the schedule a little bit. We'll of course keep the committee updated on that as we go. Any updates from, or anything I'm missing from Tasha or Eugene?
No, I think that's pretty comprehensive.
Any questions from the committee?
Any questions from the committee? Well, I have one question about that timeline. I think as many of us know, at this point in time, RBOC is set to sunset at the end of the year. It has not yet been extended. It may be extended, but in the event it is not extended past December 31st, and if this audit timeline keeps on moving, how would the potential expiration sunset of RBOC impact the release of the report?
That's a good question, Chair Holober. I would defer probably to the city attorney Ortega. Maybe could help us out if she's in attendance.
Hey, good morning. This is City Attorney Catherine Ortega. We would have to look at the existing contract with CSA, which I think is a later agenda item, to confirm what would become of ongoing audits that are ongoing under that contract between RBOC and CSA, and what the termination provisions would look like in that instance. But I would not expect that if RBOC ceased to exist for whatever reason, as of the end of the year, there would be anyone for CSA to deliver an audit to. So CSA would probably be compensated. I would guess, you know, we'd have to look at the contract, would be compensated for the work performed to date, and then the work would stop because there would be no one to deliver it to. But it would depend on what the contract says. If there's a party that would inherit the right to continue auditing and to complete the audit.
Okay, maybe that's something that can be discussed offline at some point after the meeting. But yeah, we certainly wouldn't want, you know, 90-95% of the work to be done and then report just to vanish into thin air. Okay, any other questions from the group? Okay. Let's open it up for public comment. If there are any members of the public, please use the raised hand feature in the Teams meeting, and the clerk will call on you.
Delaying for a moment to see if we have any speakers who wish to provide public comments on agenda item number 3 related to the audit update. And it appears, Mr. Chair, that we have no speakers.
Okay. Public comment is closed. And unless there are any final comments or questions from the group. Okay, we will close item number 3 and move on to item 4. This is planning for future audits. And this has been sort of a standing agenda item we've had for months, if not a couple of years now. are there any comments or questions from committee? I know we had a couple of new members who sort of had to get up to speed on the ongoings of the committee and the types of scope of work that we potentially could look at in terms of sort of beyond our typical financial audits.
Well, yeah, it depends if the work continues.
That's sort of the elephant in the room, right? So, that's a good question.
That's the thing we should figure out first, what happens after the end of the year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So maybe this is something that going forward, we can maybe take off the agenda until we have some clarity on the future of RBOC, and it can make its way back onto the agenda once we have that information.
Yeah.
Okay. Seeing no other comments, we will open this up now for public comment. Are there any members in the public who wish to speak?
Raise your hand in Teams if you have public comment. And it appears there are no speakers.
Okay. Public comment is closed. And I'll just make one brief comment. You know, this is, it's been a few months now since we last met, but I think it was back in May, I presented at the PUC commission meeting to present our annual report. And I did mention some of the ongoing work and the interest in potentially new audits. And there was actually a fair amount of interest from the commission itself on the work that RBOC is doing. And they were interested in what potential other types of audits we may be able to do. And they'd like to be kept informed about that if we decide to, if RBOC is extended and is able to continue on other types of work. Okay, so with no other comment, item 4 is closed. Moving along, we now have for item 5, this is the memorandum of understanding between amendment number 1 between the Office of the Comptroller for the audit and technical services. And I believe we also have Hunter Wong to present on this item as well.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So our current agreement between CSA and RBOC runs through December 31st, 2022. As you can probably tell, it's a few years in the past. So that was our oversight. We would like to update that contract to extend through the proper time. And so we are putting before the committee a draft amendment. It is a time-only extension. We do not need any additional funds. This would just extend our current agreement through to June 30th, 2025. But as we were discussing earlier, this is, you know, we understand that there is a potential sunset date if RBOC is not extended. But the current amendment would The draft amendment would just extend the terms of our existing agreement through June 30th, 2025, and then month to month thereafter until either party chooses to terminate with 30 days written notice, which is a provision from our original agreement, just carried over. Happy to answer any questions on this.
Okay. Any comments or questions from the committee?
DC Ortega.
Okay. Or we can let DC Ortega speak if you'd like.
I would just make one suggestion to the amendment that it extends through June 30, 2025, or the sunset date of RBOC, whichever comes first.
Yeah.
That way we don't run into a situation where the contract, where we still owe money under the, where RBOC still owes money, but does not exist to pay it.
Although if we keep the sunset date, if we keep the June 30th, 2025 date in place, then potentially that could allow for a situation where RBOC sunsets and they can still continue their work perhaps and finish up the report.
If RBOC sunset, though, there's not anyone to deliver the work to.
Okay.
We'd have to look at the full agreement, and maybe Hunter could send us the full agreement to see if there's a successor body that would succeed to the right to receive the audit. Mm-hmm. But if RBOC does not exist, then there's no one with a right to receive the audit.
Okay. So maybe that's something we can look at again offline, and maybe we can make an amendment, say, you know, present it to the PUC commission or somebody else. That
I just wouldn't want a situation where RBOC would sunset and we would have and there would be a contract outstanding with CSA where CSA would need to be made whole because the contract term would extend beyond RBOC's life.
When it comes to the documents linked on your agenda, is the original 2019 MOU in its entirety?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So we don't need to dig that up. It is right there.
Yeah, I think this will definitely be something we want to talk about offline. There is no, I think at least based on my reading of the original agreement, there's no successor body. The agreement is just between RBOC. There's no successor body in the original MOU, but we will definitely reach out to you offline. Thank you.
That sounds good. Any other comments or questions from the committee?
Are you looking for us to approve this today?
I think so. We could always make another amendment at the next meeting if there's something that needs to be cleaned up. I think, you know, just to formalize that CSA is still doing work on behalf of RBOC, I think we do need to approve this, and we can accept the amendment suggested by the city attorney's office. Okay. Well, seeing the other comments, let's open this up for public comment. Are there any members of the public who wish to speak? No, is that opportunity?
Raise your hand in Teams if you have public comment on this item, agenda item number 5. And Mr. Chair, please
whip. Yeah, it appears at this time there are no public members either in the Teams meeting or in the physical location, the room here. Is there a motion to approve the proposed memorandum of understanding with the suggested amendment that has been made?
So moved.
Okay. With the amendment to?
Yeah.
Yes. Okay.
Yes.
Is there a seconder for that?
I'll second.
Okay, we have a motion by Vice Chair Ruthie and a second by Member Visser. If we could have a roll call vote, please.
On the motion to adopt the amendment number 1 with the change suggested by the DCA as offered by Vice Chair Ruthie and seconded by Member Visser, Member Camp.
Aye.
Camp, aye. Leung.
Aye.
Leung, aye. Vice Chair Ruthie.
Aye.
Ruthie, aye. Member Visser.
Aye.
Visser, aye. Chair Holliver.
Aye.
Holliver, aye. Mr. Chair, there are 5 ayes.
Okay. The motion is approved, and we will move on now to item number 6. This is the wastewater revenue bond sale. And I believe we have Nikolai Sklarov provide that presentation.
Yeah.
Committee members, thank you, Chair Hollower. I'll go ahead and share the presentation. And hopefully all of you will have a copy of that as well. The SFPSC just recently closed on July 31st, the largest sale of bonds in our history. As you have heard here before, the wastewater enterprise is reaching a crescendo of activity, including at the South East treatment plant, and this will help fund those costs. Deploy into my slides. There we go. Hopefully all of you have also received a email of the bond sale announcement. If any of you didn't receive it, please pass us here that information. But this is an announcement that we send out through interested parties within the city family, and follows a format used by our city controller's office for other bond sale announcements.
Oh man, how do I even do that? I don't remember how to do it.
Is it the pop out?
Mm-hmm. Which?
All the way at the top, yeah. Next to chat, the pop out option, maybe?
Pop out?
Ah,
there we go.
Is it better?
A little better.
It's
better.
Thank you.
Hope that didn't help. Here we go.
Battle and perfect.
So just to give you an indication, most investors receive an electronic version of our offering document. This is the most important activity that we work on prior to a bond sale, which is a thick book of information about the bonds themselves, as well as the credit of the SFPC that's delivered to the marketplace through MuniOS, together with a presentation, a slides only presentation, as well as in this case, we also sent out a video to orient folks about the Southeast Treatment Plant and the activities that are underway there. That is ultimately finalized after the bonds are sold and the interest rates are set, with a final official statement that is then available electronically to investors and general public on the Municipal Securities Rulemaking Board, a website called EMLA. So this bond sale consisted of four series. We designate different series for different purposes. Series A, which was authorized for up to $480 million, was to finance biosolids digester facilities projects. What we were doing in this case is issuing those on a short-term basis, on a short-term taxable basis, as part of our strategy relative to IRA tax credits that we're also pursuing for that facility. We'll have the opportunity to then refinance the debt after the short-term bonds mature, so that we can then optimize the use of taxable and tax-exempt bonds because there is a haircut associated with the IRA tax credits. The second series is Series B, which completes and refinances existing debt for the Southeast Community Center. For those of you who had an opportunity to visit the campus down there, you saw that that is one of the true success stories in terms of community engagement. As you know, this project was built as a mitigation for the impacts of the plant on the surrounding community. The center has been usually successful and has been incorporating new uses, some of which that are planned in the future raise potential tax concerns. And so we are refinancing this all on a taxable basis to allow the community to use that facility freely and not raise tax concerns that would have harmful impacts on our overall debt program. In conjunction with the financing, we went to Moody's and S&P. This was a presentation that involved the highest levels of the organization. And I'm pleased to say that Moody's and S&P both affirmed the outstanding ratings of AA2 and AA- that they've assigned to our outstanding bonds. And Moody's affirmed their stable outlook on the rating. S&P did lower their outlook on the rating to negative, and it specifically pointed to potential concerns about the size of the program and future debt. And so this is effectively a warning to us that we'll need to manage debt service coverage in the future to sustain that as we issue new bonds in the future. The Series A was rated by Moody's only. Series B was rated by both Moody's and S&P. Moving on to Series C and D, these are our two tax-exempt series. I forgot to mention on Series A that because that is SSIP, that's also a green bond, and that's why we're another reason for creating the designations here. And again, for Series C and Series D, these are both tax-exempt bonds. Because Series C funds SSIP projects, that's eligible as a green bond under our programmatic certification. Series D is non-SSIP and has not been certified. So we have simply issued those as unlabeled bonds. And again, these bonds were rated by both Moody's and S&P. So just a quick description of market conditions in July when we sold this. We sold this over several days because we're issuing both short-term bonds as well as long-term bonds. We were issuing taxable bonds as well as tax-exempt bonds. And we had two differently led syndicates for those, the B of A Securities as the book runner for our taxable bonds, Morgan Stanley for our tax-exempt bonds, and a larger syndicate behind them. As we've told you in the past, market conditions have been unusual. They continued to be unusual. They continue to be unusual today, and that we still remain in this very prolonged inverted yield curve with very short-term rates slightly higher than longer-term rates. And this is all because of the impacts of the Federal Reserve's raising of interest rates and the delays in lowering rates that had been anticipated. We now anticipate that the Fed will be lowering rates. While we have differences of opinion from the various firms that we work with, the consensus view appears to be five cuts by January 1st, so 1.25%, 125 basis points potentially. We're monitoring that closely as we are in the process of working on our future bonds as well for the water enterprise, which will come later this year, fiscal year. But back to this specific chart, This is a lot of information presented in one chart. 30 years of history of interest rates, remembering that when we issue a 30-year bond, we're potentially selling bonds at each of 30 different interest rates along the yield curve. This is quite different than the corporate market, which is typically a bullet maturity. But in the municipal market, we typically use serialized bonds. And that gives us an opportunity to negotiate and structure our bonds all along that yield curve. So what this also shows you is that over the past year, that blue range shows you the band of those interest rates, and the black line is where we actually were in July. Typically, while we can modestly adjust our timing, we have a 10-year program that calls for a lot of debt, and we need to keep these projects going. So we typically are not adjusting and picking years to borrow based on interest rates. We're taking basically a market average approach to that. We do, of course, refine how we structure given prevailing interest rates at any given time. So quickly moving on to bond sale results. Series A, as I mentioned, was a relatively short maturing 27. Series B was a little bit longer based on the life of the existing debt for that facility. And then series C and D extended out to 54. You'll see the concept there of term bonds. What we will often do with longer bonds is, because there isn't efficient demand for each of those maturities on the long end, we'll bundle those up, create a larger serial bond that is attractive to institutional buyers. We had a lot of demand for bonds, allows us to reduce the interest rates during the offering period. And as you can see at the bottom, for our tax exempt bonds, we had 2.2 times over subscription by the end of the order period.
Can you go back to that previous slide? Thanks. Thank you for this. I'm interested in the pricing details. For Series A, I'm looking at lowered the offering interest rates over the entire course from 0.15 to 0.45. Can you talk a bit more about what that represents? Like, what's the mechanism involved in that and what that means for taxpayers?
Yeah, it means that as one of the things that we're trying to do whenever we issue bonds is increase the demand for our bonds. We do lots of things associated with that. We do investor presentations. We labeled our bonds, Climate Bonds Initiative out of London, issued an international press release. What we're trying to do is bring as many buyers to the table as possible. And as we're going through that order process, as we see demand that exceeds the orders, we're able to lower the price that we're offering in the marketplace. Municipal bonds aren't traded on an exchange. So each of those interest rates along the yield curve has to be negotiated with investors.
Okay.
And we are quite unique at the SFPUC and the city generally. There's been a tradition here of using not one, but two municipal advisors to advise us. They're at the table helping us in that negotiation. And then by policy, we're even more unusual in that we also have an independent pricing consultant, as you'll see later in the presentation.
Thanks. So that Series A, that's what, a three-year Your muni bond at AA. Out of curiosity, what's the rate that we offered?
We have that here. So the all-in true interest cost for the bonds is a 4.774
for three-year series A. Three-year muni. Okay.
For series B, 4.992. And then for our tax exempt bonds, again, investors are not paying. Each investor has to make their own determination of their tax status. But typically, tax exempt buyers are not paying federal income tax, and depending on where they reside, may not be paying state income tax. They're willing, therefore, to accept a lower interest rate. But you also have to bear in mind that each of these has a different average life based on the maturity as well. So those series C and D bonds are the longest bonds. But overall, the interest cost for all of this borrowing was 4.293%, which is substantially less than our projected rates, and so that will allow us to potentially lower costs.
So just to clarify, I think you've mentioned this early in the presentation, I think at previous meetings as well, the 30-year bonds, I think you mentioned basically there's a series of maturity dates over 30 years. So let's say if you issue a $300 million bond, it'll be roughly $10 million matures within 1 year, $10 million after 2 years, et cetera, up to the full 30 years.
Yes.
Okay.
And conceptually, I'll talk why it doesn't happen like this exactly, but conceptually, when we're issuing 30 years of debt, we have bonds maturing each of those years, and the bonds maturing in each of those years carry a different interest rate.
Right.
In a normal year, the lowest, the shortest ones have the lowest rate, and that the longest ones, the highest rate. We're in this unusual situation now. So, for example, when we did the short-term bonds, we had to get it past some of that that inversion.
Right.
But basically, what we're taking advantage of is the fact that rates are expected to be lower as the Fed
raises rates. And then typically those longer term, maturity dates, those will be refinanced at some point, most likely before it reaches that maturity.
Yeah, one of the interesting things about tax exempt bonds is because we do that serialization and because we're issuing on a yield curve, as you move down the yield curve, even if rates don't change, the bonds that you issued originally as 10-year bonds, you could refinance. Shorter bonds, etc. down the line. So, so most tax exempt bonds, particularly in the rate environment we've been in over the last 30 years, don't stay outstanding to maturity.
Correct. Yeah.
And we are particularly active in pursuing opportunities to refinance and lower our costs.
I have a question, and I'm an amateur at this, right? So I don't know if I'm comparing apples to apples. So the short term, the three-year Series A, that's at 4.774, right? Is that competitive for a muni for three-year?
Well, it's a taxable rate.
Okay.
And it's strategically issued as taxable bonds because we're pursuing IRA tax credits.
So when you say taxable, is that, and because I'm an amateur, does that mean that's not a municipal bond?
No, it's still a municipal bond, but in the municipal market, we issue both taxable and tax-exempt bonds.
Okay.
And there can be strategic reasons why we issue taxable bonds.
Okay.
There can also be legal issues that don't allow us to issue tax-exempt bonds for particular uses. In this particular case, in case of Series A, it's the former, that we're trying to be strategic in terms of how we're preparing for what could be a substantial gain in terms of IRA tax credits.
Okay. So I'm looking at on the secondary market, right? Right now I'm looking at the rates you would get if you bought a double A municipal, if you bought a double A corporate bond, if you bought treasuries, right? Mm-hmm. So I'm wondering that 4774, that taxable muni bond, what's the benchmark? How do you know if you got a good deal? Like, how do you know you're not overpaying investors on the interest rate?
Because we have our financial...
Like, what do you compare to is what I'm asking?
Treasury rates and other corporate taxable bonds.
Okay. So treasury is not taxable at the state level, right? Would you, for an apples-to-apples, would you do a corporate bond as a...
Nor are these bonds.
Oh, so you're saying these are not taxable at the state level, but they're taxable at the federal level?
Yeah.
Okay. So, and this is just for my education. So from that basis, if I look at a three-year treasury right now, on the secondary market, you can buy a three-year treasury, and it pays out at 3.82. Okay. And this pays out at almost, a point higher, 4.774. So the United States Treasury only has to pay out 3.8%, whereas
the United States Treasury is also a triple rated.
True. So we in San Francisco, we have to pay out at 4.774, almost a whole percent higher. Is that a good deal? I don't know. I don't know how to evaluate. Like, you could tell me that, we, San Francisco, pay out at 3.82%, I would say, oh, that's a great deal because, we're matching the treasury. If you told us that we pay out at 15%, I would say that sounds like a bad deal, right? Mm-hmm. But I don't know how to evaluate 4.774. If you told me buy is, like, what's the range? How do you know?
Well, we know because we have our financial advisors, and they provide us post-sale reports and detailed analysis. But we also know because we were there real time watching the pricing relative to the marketplace as of that date. So your pricing is always based on when you're in the market. Right. We happen to be in the market July 17th and 18th. So that's what you compare to. You don't compare to interest rates today. You compare it to interest rates as of July 17th.
Right. At the federal level, the Fed hasn't changed interest rates much since July. But I'm just going to belabor a point.
A good comparison would be like, how would this look like if you were in the city of Detroit? Right.
Other municipal bonds.
There's a different risk profile for us as a city, right? Yep. And I think it's also a different risk profile in terms of what the asset is associated with, right? If we can just jack up rates and collect more money, then, we can pay the bond, can pay back the bonds, right? But, I'm no expert either, but the 4.77 in comparison to the treasury feels pretty good, I would say. That's just based on previous conversations we had here. Yeah. I would think for something like the city of Detroit, this would be higher probably, right? Simply because, it's not economically strong. There's not a consumer base that would carry on if they jacked up prices for their water infrastructure. So I think, the market is pretty efficient at pricing these risks in. So.
And taxable financing is especially efficient in the marketplace because you're basing your pricing on such a large universe of borrowers.
I'm curious, by the way, as an aside, I'd be curious if we've ever published some kind of analysis comparing ourselves to other municipalities to know.
Well, it's also just going to turn to the timing. It's all about your timing, right? And as he says, he's tried to average do them over time so that you take advantage of the different markets.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, back 4 or 5 years ago, you probably got lower rates, but that was what the market looked like. So the market looks very different right now. So for the current market situation, that looks pretty good to me.
We enjoy across this exceptional demand because we are part of a city and county, San Francisco. We have a name that is more recognized than most municipal issuers. We also have built our profile in the marketplace because of our outreach using labeling of green bonds that has, so for example, there's an article by the International Financing Review about our transaction. It was observed in Europe. So I think we have a lot more eyes on our transactions than most smaller municipalities.
Well, I think last time we did this, you mentioned how a bank in Germany had purchased a large chunk of the green bonds. I'm trying to. It was a bank in Cologne. I don't know, but they like put the Germans like the drink. I'm drink, right? So they like their green bonds.
You like green bonds?
if we as an issuer pay a low interest rate, then I like it a lot, right?
I can tell you that, you know, we're able to watch the orders coming in real time from the investors. Overwhelmingly, the orders are coming in on the green bonds. Now, there are also other reasons for that, too. Part of is that this was the largest green bond issuance that we've done in our history between Series A and Series C. And so the block sizes for those offerings were larger, so that's more attractive to investors. And we also provide, as we market our bonds, we provide a priority for retail investors. We also provide a priority for ESG investors during the marketing phase of our bonds. And all of these help to build our book. You know, again, I alluded to our financial advisors. We have two financial advisors, Montague DeRose and Baxter McCarley, who assisted us through the pricing. They provide us analysis before the sale, during the sale, following the sale. And as I also mentioned, we have an independent pricing consultant. This is by under our debt policies. Whenever we negotiate the sale of bonds, we have an independent pricing consultant who is not part of advising us on the transaction, but simply evaluates whether we received a reasonable and fair price for the bonds. So this is the...
Are those two reports available?
Yes, I believe we can share those.
That'd be great, yeah.
Let me confirm under our contract with them, but yes.
Okay.
I believe so. The outstanding water debt, you can see how this has increased our debt again. When we're issuing bonds, we're also taking out commercial paper. So we've reduced the commercial paper as well. And then this is how it all ultimately plays out. If you'll recall, the green is our WIFIA lending. We've taken advantage of federal WIFIA loans to fund a substantial portion of our program. WIFIA provides us with unique flexibility in that they will lock in an interest rate in advance of actually taking the funds. So we were able to lock in very favorable long-term interest rates of 1.45% with an average life of over 30 years. What that dark blue debt is. The light green is the capacity that we have not yet drawn upon. It's a reimbursement program. So we will be using that capacity as we are able to. And then what we do with our bonds, again, we're trying to keep a nice level debt service to ensure that we're not having large year-to-year fluctuations in ratepayer rates. And then this structure also then gives us the flexibility to continue to layer in additional debt, which we do need to do with the size of this program. So my last slide here is again to show you our annual debt issuance, or not my second to last slide, and that this was, again, the largest green bond that we've issued to date. And lastly, how this affects ARBOC as a result of this sale generated ARBOC proceeds of $565,000 for additional costs.
Okay, thank you. Great presentation, Mr. Squire. Yeah, we had some questions along the way, but now that we've had a chance to digest the presentation, any other questions or comments from the committee?
Can I? Yeah. I don't think it's in the presentation. I see how you've got on the slide 11, you have how much we've drawn down of the WIFIA and SRF loans. I don't think this presentation is like the what's left, because I know you have all the green kind of in graphs, but it doesn't kind of total it up. Do you have like an estimate of what's kind of left? Is that already guaranteed with the funds that's why you've got it in green kind of line there?
So there are actually different flavors of WIFIA. So we've actually entered into three agreements with WIFIA. Mm-hmm. The first two we've begun drawing on. The third is a programmatic loan. We've done the first loan under that. We haven't been drawing on it yet, but that rate is locked in. But we have additional loans that we will also be able to draw upon, and those rates have not yet been set. So the nice thing about the WIFIA program, though, is this element where we can lock in the rate, take advantage of it. WIFIA also allows us to renegotiate the rate once, as long as we haven't drawn on the loan. So there's also a strategy around when do we take our reimbursements. But the most important thing is we need to fund those costs first before we can get draw on those loans on a reimbursement basis.
And I'm assuming much of the cash you're pulling out for the bonds is what you're using to then get reimbursed from WIFIA.
So we drew down approximately $800 million, for example, on loans one and two mm-hmm. in January. A substantial portion of those were used to defease notes that we had used to fund the costs and which otherwise would have needed to be refinanced and become long-term debt.
Thank you.
Any other questions?
Thank you very much, Member Kim. Any question?
Just trying to think. Wastewater bonds are typically priced differently from so there's wastewater and then, lack of a better term, bonds are priced differently for different pieces of our infrastructure, correct?
That's correct. Each of them are separately rated, yes. They're separately secured. They have different actual coverage, debt service coverage levels. For example, our water program did a lot of borrowing and it's now reaching the completion of WSIP, so it has a different future expectation of debt issuance than our wastewater, which is at the beginning of the SSIP and has a lot of debt.
Okay. Very informative. Thank you.
Thank you, Albert.
Okay. Thank you for that presentation. If we have to open this up for public comment, so if there are any members of the public who wish to speak, please use the raise hand feature. We'll get to you.
Mr. Chair, this does not appear we have any speakers.
Okay. That public comment is closed. And we will now move on to item number 7. This is the approval of minutes from the May 14th, 2024 meeting. It's been a little while since we last met, so hopefully we may need to refresh our memories a little bit as to what we discussed in that meeting. But I believe the minutes are attached.
I can make a motion to approve.
Okay.
So making a motion to approve the minutes.
I'll second.
These motions will be in order after we've heard from the public.
Okay. Yes, let's open it up for public comment.
And Mr. Chair, it doesn't appear that we have any speakers. You can close public comment.
Okay. So with that, let's take the motion and the second again.
We have a motion from Member Camp, seconded by Vice Chair Vuthy, to approve the minutes on that motion. Member Camp.
Aye.
Camp, aye. Member Leung.
Aye.
Leung, aye. Vice Chair Vuthy.
Aye.
Vuthy, aye. Member Veser.
Aye.
Veser, aye. Chair Holober.
Aye.
Holober, aye. Mr. Chair, there are 5 ayes.
Okay, so the minutes are approved. Moving on to item 8, announcements, comments, questions, future agenda items. We currently have 4 Army meetings scheduled this year, September 10th, October 8th, November 12th, and December 10th. I think as, and then several outstanding items just that we're keeping an eye on. I think we also had discussed earlier today the potential sunset of our box. I think that's maybe something to consider as a potential agenda item, perhaps at the next meeting. Any other comments, announcements, questions from the group?
Well, what's the timeline if we don't want to sunset our book, or if we, well, I don't know who are the parties involved, right? I can,
right?
I could probably think how on the other side of the fence people will say, like, okay, let's just sunset this thing.
Understood. Yeah, and you know, I don't want to get too far off of the agenda here, but it's public information. There was a civil grand jury report that was issued I think last month that looked at all the various city boards, committees, commissions. There's like 130 of them or something that they don't know. And they did identify 15 committees that they recommended terminating. And ARBOC was actually one of those committees, and they recommended that it could be, the responsibility could be assumed by the city services auditor. So I don't think we should talk too much about it now, but maybe that's something that we can discuss at the next meeting. The civil grand jury report does go to the Board of Supervisors and to the mayor's office to respond. So there is, I believe, in September, the board clerk.
Government Audit and Oversight will hear and draft their responses to the civil grand jury report at their second meeting in September. Which is probably the 19th.
Okay, so that would be after our September 10th meeting if we wanted to have some type of a comment or anything. The Government and Oversight Committee provides their response to the report, and then that goes to the full board, you know, a week or two later after that for a formal approval. But then their response is more... It's more of a statement as opposed to, you know, an official enactment of some type of policy. So I think regardless of what their response is, there is potential at some point between now and the end of the year to extend ARBOC or to let it expire. We'll keep track of that and maybe add that to our next some type of discussion on our next September meeting. Any other comments or questions?
I mean, yeah. I will. Oh, go ahead.
This is DCA Ortega. I would just say that the civil grand jury report is advisory in its nature. It is not a legal body that will prescribe what the board should do. And the existing RBOC renewal ordinance remains also in front of the board. So it's a concurrent package for the board to consider.
So, sorry, was there an ordinance that was actually submitted to the board at some point? I know our previous clerk, our previous chair had submitted correspondence requesting RBOC to be extended.
Following following action by this committee in 2023, the chair submitted a draft ordinance to the then chair of the Rules Committee, requesting that RBOC's terms be extended by ordinance. No member of the Board of Supervisors has picked up that draft ordinance and introduced it. There's not an active legislative item right now that would make that action.
Right.
Okay. And the board is on recess right now.
Understood. Okay. So yeah, certainly something to keep an eye out, keep an eye on over the next couple of months. Any other comments, questions? Okay. Seeing none, we will open this up for public comment.
Raise your hand in Teams if you have public comment for this item. Mr. Chair, it appears we have no speaker.
So no speakers today. Okay, so with that, public comment is closed, and we will adjourn the meeting, and we will see you all on September 10th.
Thank you, everybody.
Have a rest of your day.
Thank you, PUC team, for the improved audio.